Want to get a chiseled look in the jawline? Sculpt and shape your jawline with added volume from Juvederm Volux XC. Juvederm Volux XC is an injectable gel specifically designed to be robust enough to improve moderate to severe loss of jawline definition. And it is the first and only hyaluronic acid filler approved for the jawline. Add volume to your jawline for a chiseled look with Juvederm Volux XC. For important safety information and to find a licensed specialist, visit Juvederm.com. That's Juvederm.com. Not for people with severe allergic reactions, allergies to lidocaine, or the proteins used in Juvederm. Common side effects include injection site redness, swelling, pain, tenderness, firmness, lumps, bumps, bruising, discoloration, or itching. There's a risk of unintentional injection into a blood vessel, which can cause vision abnormalities, blindness, stroke, temporary scabs, or scarring. Talk to a licensed specialist to find out if it's right for you. Visit Juvederm.com. That's Juvederm.com.
Many of us have those stubborn pounds that seem impossible to lose, no matter how good we eat or how hard we work out. My solution is PlushCare. PlushCare is a leading telehealth provider with doctors who are there for you day and night to partner with you in your weight loss journey. They can prescribe FDA-approved weight loss medications like Wegovy and Zepbound for those who qualify. Plus, they accept most insurance plans. To get started, visit plushcare.com/weightloss. That's plushcare.com/weightloss.
You're listening to the QuickBook Reviews podcast. Brighten your day with a book.
Hello, my fellow bookworms. This is Philippa from QuickBook Reviews, author interviews and book reviews. How are you doing today? My goodness, I have finished now all of the 16 books on the Women's Prize Fiction long list. And it's fair to say I'm exhausted by it. How can you be exhausted by reading books? I don't know. But yes, I've got things to say, views to say. I'm going to review the final four. And then in another episode, I haven't quite worked out when and how, I'm going to give you my favourites. I'm going to make predictions. There's all sorts going to be happening. But anyway, enough about that. What have we got on today? We have got some great books. We have got The Mystery of Yew Tree House by Leslie Thompson. And Leslie, very exciting, is going to come on and talk to us about this book. Also, I am going to review for you Soldier Sailor by Claire Kilroy, Lies of a Century-Old Trickster by Mareini Lee, Enter Ghost by Isabella Hammad, and The Trace of Sun by Pam Williams. Those are the final four books to tell you about on the Women's Prize Fiction long list. But let's get stuck in straight away to The Mystery of Yew Tree House. Now, I listened to this as an audiobook, which I really enjoyed, but let me tell you a little bit about it. 1940. At Yew Tree House, recently widowed, Adelaide Stride is raising her two daughters alone. But it's not just the threat of German invasion that keeps her up at night. She is surrounded by enemies posing as allies. And while war rages, she grows sure that something terrible is about to happen. 2023. Soon after Stella Darnell begins her holiday at Yew Tree House, a skeleton is found in a pillbox at the bottom of the garden. The bullet hole in the skull tells her that the person was murdered. This triggers the unravelling of a mystery, 80 years in the making. Stella will learn that Adelaide was right to worry. The fighting might have been happening abroad, but the true enemy was always much closer to home. Well, I absolutely love this book. As I say, I've read others of Leslie's and enjoyed them. But enough about me. Let's go and talk to Leslie now. It is my huge pleasure to welcome to the podcast today Leslie Thompson, whose latest book is The Mystery of Yew Tree House. Leslie, welcome to the podcast.
Oh, it's lovely to be here, Philippa. Great treat.
I've been looking forward to talking to you so much because I have read so many of your books. So this is very exciting. But let's start with the first sort of obvious question. For those who haven't yet read The Mystery of Yew Tree House, could you give us a little summary of it?
I guess it's Christie-esque, as in Agatha Christie, I guess. I love Agatha Christie, hence the title. And it's in a house in the countryside and there's a murder. But it takes place in the present day, but also during the Second World War, which is a period I've used before in the distant dead. Remember my own books. Only this is set in Sussex and the other one was set in the Blitz in London. And it's so we see it over two time periods, which is something I like to do because I'm very interested, I suppose, in how the past connects with the present. Basically, some people will know pillboxes very well if they live along the coast in Britain, but otherwise they'll be thinking it's what you take your meds in. But pillboxes were basically built and camouflaged during the Second World War along the home front, so for the expected invasion of the Nazis. And you still see them when you go for walks, red brick structures with holes for the guns. And I discovered in the course of doing my research, because I'd seen these pillboxes in the course of walking around, dog walking, etc. And the last one I saw had sheep coming out of it rather than the Home Guard. But they were for the Home Guard. But I also discovered they were for auxiliary units. And I won't spend this time talking about auxiliary units, but they were a secret army that were meant to stay behind after, if we got invaded and the government was moved away, up somewhere safe, underground somewhere, and the army was forced to retreat, they would stay behind. And when the Nazis arrived, they would basically kill them when they could. They wouldn't. They were small armies of people in these pillboxes, underground in bunkers mostly, actually. And they would have to sneak out at night. They'd know the countryside very well. And they would just literally, as the phrase went, butcher and bolt. So they weren't trying to go hand-to-hand combat, and it wasn't fair fighting because they couldn't afford it. There were only a small number of people versus the German army. And I've found this as fascinating and discovered, indeed, that my next-door neighbour's father was in one. He didn't know. I discovered it during the course of my research, came across his name. So it's about the auxiliary unit working in the Second World War, but then we see in the present day there's a murder because there's a body found in a pillbox and it's been there for 80 years. So the story is really about who was the murderer and who was the body. And then there's another murder and so on. I hope it's gripping. I really enjoyed writing it, which is a good sign, I think.
And it's part of a series, but I would say you don't have to start at book one and read the whole series. You could jump in with The Mystery of Yew Tree House and enjoy it completely.
Yes, you could, I hope. I write every novel. It's part of the Detective's Daughter series. It's number 9. And I write every book with the view, because I myself have done this. Pick up a book, you discover it's number 5. But actually, it doesn't really matter because it's a great story. So in this case, yeah, I write it as a standalone. And if you haven't come across the Detective's Daughter series before, I hope that means you go back to the beginning. But you don't have to. You can dot about, for that matter. There's the whole thing about a plot. You're not always just interested in what happens next. You're interested in when you go back to realize, I know what's going to happen later because it really doesn't matter. I personally think you can read a series out of order.
Yes, I agree. It's a bit like, for me, I prefer to watch the film first before I read the book, because the film only does lip service to some of the book. And then I go and read the book and I'm like, oh my goodness, there's this element and this element. And I think that's the same with the series.
Yes, well, I wish that was the case with mine, but it's not yet been made into a film. But you never know. One day.
No. One day that will absolutely happen. Yes. I love, like you, I love two time frames in a book. But does it make it harder to write, or is it actually easier? Because if you kind of find it hard to think of what happens next in one time frame, you can go back to the other time frame.
No, weirdly, it doesn't seem to have any effect at all. I think one just feeds the other, as I hope when you come to read it, it feeds the other as well. So I'm personally very interested in the young person in the old person, if you like. When I'm writing about the younger character and then they appear later as an older character, I'm thinking of that younger person and then they're appearing as the older character. And then, of course, that plot's going on anyway. And then if you go back to the early days, I'm setting up the stuff that will... That Stella and Jack have to work out. Why would that happen? We know because we were there. And I love that idea. I just love the idea in reality, really. What if we had been there? You see the signs, you see at doorsteps outside houses, old houses, which are worn because of the number of people who walked through, crossed the threshold over the sometimes centuries. And who were they? Why were they there? And it's just all these little things that... And I notice it myself with something, thinking, oh, I wonder one day in 50 years' time, somebody's going to wonder why there's a dent in the wall there. They won't know that I crashed the lawnmower into it or whatever. It just, I find all that, the evidence of the past in the present, just so fascinating. It just seems to feed as I'm writing it. So it's easy. short, long answer to a short question.
Wonderful. And we come across these characters. We've got Claire, Rosa, Jack, Stella. How do you develop the characters that you're writing? Do you develop them fully in your mind before you start writing them?
No. Often in the first draft, there's less to them. But as I write, they become more and more. And then I think, of course, it should be like that because of that happening. Oh, and actually, I think I'll make her do that. I have this feeling that my characters all start off not very pleasant. And I wonder what that's about, because I hope I'm not unpleasant. And then the second draft, they're much more pleasant. They're nicer. I don't know if I start off with the sort of the bad sides of the dark side, and then I bring in the light side, and then I bring in the complexities. But I write about three drafts, and the characters develop over the drafts, really. There are some that kind of leap out. Not as much fully formed, but I've got a very good idea of what I'm trying to express with them, I suppose. So I can think of their traits quite clearly. Jack, for example, is now 9 novels on, so he's developed over the years. But at first, I knew that his mother had been murdered, so I knew that he was damaged in some way. How was he damaged? I asked the questions, and then I think, what would he be like? And I do a huge amount of research, so I read lots of books on children who have lost their parents and all had parents that weren't really present and so were sort of essentially abandoned, even though the parent was present. He went to boarding school. There's a whole lot of stuff, and it's come up again, actually, with Charles Spencer's new book about boarding school trauma. And everybody thinks, oh, God, privileged, what's their problem? But the whole idea of being sent away by the people who love you, or you think they thought they loved you, but so why have they sent you away? And you love them and you miss them, but you can't, they're your enemy because they sent you away, but yet they're the only people that can save you. So that double bind is very traumatic. And we have him as a boy and we see that happening. So we understand that that's there too. So experiences for me shape the character. So I'm also thinking, we've just had your character do this. What effect would that have on somebody who has these qualities? And so it develops like that, hence the several drafts, I suppose.
This seems like a great time to ask you if you would mind reading us a little bit. And I believe it's going to be from the very beginning.
Okay. If you're all sitting comfortably, then I will begin. That won't mean anything to anybody under the age of 40. But anyway, Listen with Mother, which I used to listen to when I was young. That's what they used to say before they read the story. Here we go. Yeah. This is the prologue. I always start from the beginning because I think in any book, that's the best place to start. 11th of August, 1940. Hastening home after work on the path across the common, zigzagging between bushes of gorse and tufted grass and always watching for shrapnel, Greta Fleming hadn't seen the man until he was upon her. We know each other, don't we? He grinned. We're at Dale's Bakery. You sold me an apple turnover. You have a lovely smile. Yes. Greta didn't remember him from the shop, but flattered, although she wasn't smiling, she forgot to hurry on. Greta's mum didn't want her taking the shortcut through Esher Common, even in daylight. If she knew Greta had done so, in her best shoes, she'd kill her. Hitler had made her mum a bag of nerves. Greta's older brother, Phil, stationed at New Haven with no leave, could face Hitler any day. Greta had promised her dad to be a proper help to her mum. Now look at her. My goodness, you are in a hurry. Have you a rendezvous with a beau? The man touched the brim of his hat. I've been at work. Baffled by the question, yet suspecting it was what Phil called dirty, Greta prayed she wasn't blushing. The birds had stopped singing. She could only hear blood pounding in her ears. Quelling an urge to run, she minded Miss Manners. I'm going home. Shouldn't be out here alone. I'm 15 and it's quicker, see? Greta caught herself talking as if she was at home and justifying being late. Nevertheless, it's not safe. Inebriated Tommies on leave, damned conches, all sorts of men about. No 15-year-old girl should be here all alone. Without it being agreed, the man accompanied Greta along the path. He was handsome, and his voice was like what she heard on the wireless, which must make it all right. He cupped her elbow. And you are? Greta. Garbo? He gave a strange laugh. Fleming. Greta smelt cigarette smoke. My mum loves her, which is why. Stupid name for a shop girl, as if I'm better than I am. Nothing stupid about you, Greta Fleming, he said. We need shop girls. I suppose, Greta told herself, her name sounded nice, said that way. Has anyone said you are beautiful? I have to get home, Greta tripped. The man moved his grip to her upper arm. That hurts. Politeness getting the better of her. Greta said this only in her head. You could be Garbo. He leaned in and teased a lock of hair from Greta's forehead. After a day in the bakery, it had lost its curl. Baby soft skin. He brushed her cheek with the back of his hand. Don't! Greta shouted. The ground blurred as she ploughed forward, pumping the air with her fists, pushing onwards. Away, away, away. A heron poised on a post might gladden the heart, or like the albatross, signal doom. As night descended, lime trees along the common's edge lost definition. One tree, felled by an army lorry that had skidded off the road two nights before, lay gashed and splintered.
I mean, my goodness, it's so visual to me as you're reading it. I can just see it playing out in my mind. Was it the same for you as you started writing that first draft?
Yes, it was. It just, some chapters I write can just come straight out. And there were, I've tinkered with it, since that I wrote it. I tinkered with it before it's published. But there wasn't much I changed in that. I was just there. Reading it is quite strange because I'm not as there as I am now hearing it. I think there is a slightly sort of psychopathic element that creeps in when you're writing and you write the scene, but you're not feeling the scene. I think if you did feel the scene as the writer, the reader wouldn't feel the scene. That's a theory anyway. Mm. So I think there's a distance you have during the writing process that is not there now. I certainly felt moved then as if somebody else had written it, I suppose.
And we should also talk about the audiobook version, because that's the one that I listened to, which is narrated, a slight crossover for my two podcasts, but it's narrated by Richard Attlee, who plays Kenton in The Archers. He's narrated, I think, most of
He's
them.
He's narrated the last three.
Oh, right.
But before that, Anna Bentinck, who is David Archer's sister, Tim Bentinck, she narrated most of the others, not all of those, but most of them. But then, yeah, Richard's done the last three. And so I was aware of that as I was reading. I was thinking, oh, I'm not Richard Attlee. Because he's got the most, you agree, I'm sure, he's got the most fantastic voice. And he really worked very hard on the books when we had meetings and he checked out how to pronounce certain things and the accents of certain characters. And yeah, he really, and actually, ironically, it was quite funny because there's a character, Lucy May, and who appears in several of the books, a journalist. And he said, I'm thinking she's a bit like Lillian. And I said, you were so right. Because I'd written about three books when I suddenly realised, this is Lillian. I hadn't based her on Lillian, but I realised that there was a Lillian-ness about her. For those of you who listen to The Archers, you'll know that I'm talking about Lillian Bellamy. And so he knew, he kind of knew how to go with that one. So he, after that, and he's done it very well. I just think I'm terribly proud that he's done it because he's my favourite character in The Archers. He's my favourite voice, if you like, because it's all about voices, isn't it? So,
and when he started narrating your books, did it alter then how you subsequently wrote the stories at all? I don't know if that had any impact.
No, it didn't. And actually, ironically, in the first one he narrated, which was The Distant Dead, which is wartime, as I was saying, and I actually make mention of Clement Attlee, who was in Churchill's coalition government and went on to have a landslide Labour government after the war. And that's his grandfather. And I didn't know at that point he would be reading them. And when he read them, he was saying to me, oh, you've been very nice about my grandfather. And I thought, thank God for that, eh? I mean, you know, that I wasn't likely not to be. And because somebody was an Attlee man, or I can't remember, I'd made a comment about that they preferred Attlee to Churchill. And so it was quite nice hearing him reading that. And he looks not unlike his grandfather, actually. There's an obvious similarity. But no, I don't think, I would say not, no. I think the only way that any reading aloud is influenced in my writing, and we were talking about this before the podcast, is that I tend to write quite a short prologue so that I can read them in situations like this. And if you write 10 pages, then you obviously can't read the whole lot. Or that I'd still be reading, wouldn't I? So that's the only thing I think I affect the way I write in terms of out loud. But no,
You mentioned a couple of times The Distant Dead, and that's why I was scrabbling round, because I've got it here. And not only have I got it, but you have signed it for me as well, Leslie. So
yes.
There you
go. Golly, look at that. Yes, of course, yes.
It was the reading party that we that
was say,
William
was that
Shaw
the reading
did.
Party?
Yeah.
Yes, that's right. Yes, that was a great William Shaw's reading party. Was great, wasn't it?
Absolutely. So that's much treasured. So yes, I recommend the Distant Dead as well. How much of you is there in these books? Would friends of yours spot any traces of you as they read the books? Or because you've written so many now, are you quite divorced from it?
There are certain events and things that they wouldn't necessarily spot, but there are certain, I mean, there are events that occur in the books that have occurred in real life. But there are things like being nearly stranded on the Chiswick Eyot when I was doing research for, I think, The Distant Dead, actually, or maybe it was, no, I can't remember. I'm not going to try. I think it's The Detective Secret. Anyway, and I was doing research and I was on the, because I often would go to the places where I'm writing, where I'm setting something, where I actually walk the land, if you like, and have the felt experience myself. And I was there sort of rootling around because Jack has a secret garden there. And I heard this shouting and I just thought, noisy shouting. And then suddenly realized it was a man and his son calling to me because the tide was coming in. I wouldn't have died or drowned, but I'd have been stuck on the island until the causeway came visible again when the tide went out. So I just got across the causeway just as the water was lapping across the two sides of it. And I put that in the novel. I also nearly got stuck at the top of a water tower, which was again during Detective Secret. And Stella gets nearly stuck. Stella and Lucy May are both stuck at the top of this water tower. And I could describe the event because it had nearly happened to me. Couldn't get the skylight open and then it shut. And I thought, I'll never get it open the other way and I'll never get out. But these are not major dramas in the end, but I could make drama out of them. In terms of the actual characters, I think my friends recognise a bit of Jack in me because I'm a bit obsessive about number plates and so is he. I took a while to realise that that was based on me. Didn't make the connection at all. And I was saying something about, oh, look, that number plate says so-and-so. And somebody said, you're just like Jack. And I thought, oh, yes.
Oh, wow.
So,
my goodness.
Yeah, that's about the only thing I can think of, though.
So when you go on location to do your research, which sounds very glamorous, apart from getting locked in places and stranded in places, do you actually write some of the book in those locations, or are you just getting all the ideas and then you always write at home?
I write at home, no. I take, so like for The Dog Walker, which came out of personal experience because we actually don't have a dog now. He's just had to be put to sleep. So that's a whole other thing.
I'm so sorry.
Alfred, who features in a lot of the novels and shall live be immortalized in the literature. We used to walk him very, well, sometimes just me, walk him very early in the morning, about 6:30, and eventually meet other people at the Priory near where I live in Lewes. But it's totally dark and just shadows and what have you, and got a head torch on. And it just occurred to me one day that actually I just do this without thinking because it's a habit. I get the dog and I go out walking. And then I meet friends who've done the same. And then we all walk in a group. But for a while, before that happens, you're on your own. So then I started thinking, there's a story here. So out of that came The Dog Walker. And it's dedicated to Alfred because he kind of gave me the idea is the sort of premise. And then after that, I was writing The Dog Walker and I'd set it in Kew by the Thames towpath. I went there and walked along the towpath, not in the early morning in the dark. I didn't do that. But what I do, to answer your question, is I take a lot of photographs of the places and certain things, and I just notice tiny details, and I'll take a picture of that. I'm taking the pictures not just, and they're on my website, not just for to remember where I was and what I saw, but because for themselves. So they are photographs in themselves. But no, I do the writing at home. I sometimes take a few notes, but rarely, actually, I have to say. It's more about the visual when I'm out and the felt experience. Well, it's not that glamorous because I've never been anywhere. I ought to write somewhere in Barbados or somewhere, but you're talking in gardens, Pluto, oh, gosh, Wormwood Scrubs, the common, not the prison. You see the prison, but yeah. Because those books are generally set sort of Gloucestershire, Hammersmith, Sussex tends to be my patch, if you like.
And talking of photos, I often love to see photos of you and your sort of writing team. We've mentioned William Shaw already, but Dom, Ellie Griffiths, You're out and about, the three of you. You're quite close.
Yes, William's gone over to Ireland at the moment, so there's just the two of us. But the three of us are good. We're the crime trio, and we have a WhatsApp group, which is that. But yeah, we do a lot of panels together. We love each other's books. We really, which is lovely. So we're friends. We love each other's books, and we have a Christmas lunch every year, sort of colleagues, if you like, because we don't have an office. And during lockdown, when you could actually meet, but you couldn't meet indoors, we got chips and sat on the beach at Rottingdean, and it was raining, and we were under these arches leaning against the wall. And we really did look as if we were homeless, it has to be said, because we just looked like should belong on the street. But yeah, we're very good mates and good support group. You need a support group. I think everyone needs a support group, regardless of what they do, but certainly Absolutely. It's great as a writer, certainly.
And talking about books, Leslie, do you have three books that you could recommend to us as books you've really enjoyed?
Oh, yes. I've been reading Trollope now for about a year, Anthony Trollope.
Oh, my favourite.
I only discovered him a year ago. Not discovered him, obviously. I think I've read The Warden several times, and that's the book I'll choose because I have read it several times. But I haven't gone on to read all the rest, and I'm working my way through I've done all the Barchester novels, and now I'm on the Palliser novels, which I watched as a child on the telly. And he's just such a brilliant writer, so I totally recommend anything by him, actually. But let's say The Warden just as a starting point, and slightly hypocritical because that is the beginning of a series, and you could start in the middle, but I suggest you start with The Warden if you want to have a go at Trollope. Brilliant on women, very strong women in his novels, great storyteller, and witty and funny too. Yeah, you forget that he's writing in the 19th century, you think, because it's so current, so contemporary. So The Warden, Anthony Trollope. Friend recommended to me, and I've just read Scrublands by Chris Hammer.
Yeah.
An Australian writer. I hadn't heard of him before, and now I shall work my way through all the others. But I was recommended this one. So this is set in Australia. He's Australian. It's set in it's described on the blurb as a dying town. And sometimes you think you could say that about most places because of the empty shops and what have you. But this really is. There's hardly anything in the town, and the weather's affected by drought and, of course, then by floods. So it's very visceral in terms of the landscape. It's that classic sort of the landscape is another character type situation. And Martin Skarsgård is a journalist who's gone there for a story. And so it's as much about his journey as a man, as a man with flaws, to say the least, who's not really found happiness in his life, as it is about the story itself, which is fascinating and complex, yet not. It's just unputdownable, I have to say. And that's Scrublands by Chris Hammer. And I'm going to go on to read others by him. So I can't recommend them, but I recommend reading that and then going on to read others. So
lovely.
And finally, I've just finished Eleanor Catton's possibly second book, Birnam Wood, which is like when Birnam Wood comes to Dunsinane, whatever, it's taken from Macbeth. And that's another book, she's from New Zealand, so it's set in New Zealand. And again, I used to live in Australia, so I'm quite antipodean focused. Yeah. And also it's fascinating, you know, what's going on with climate change. They're obviously feeling it hugely too. It's sort of about climate change, but it's about a group of people who run a kind of co-op, a guerrilla gardening type situation where they take over bits of land and grow vegetables on them and then sell them to people or give them to people. Anyway, she uncovers various other things going on, but so do other people. And it brings out the characters of the people and their different principles and their ethics, as well as being a really good tale. And it just seems to go on and on in a really good way. It just unfolds. And just as you think, oh, we're getting to the, oh, no, there's more. I read her first book, which off the top of my head, I can't remember the name of, which I loved and couldn't really understand why I loved it, because some of it was quite slow, quite detailed. It was about gold mining or panning for gold in the 19th century. And yet it was utterly gripping. Both books by Eleanor Catton, but Birnam Wood is at the moment a bestseller, and it's a really good read. So all of these are damn good reads, I'd say.
Brilliant. Oh, they said, well, I mean, I love Anthony Trollope, and I've enjoyed some of Chris Hammer's books, so I need to read more of his. And I haven't read Birnam Wood. So yes, those are fantastic. But Leslie, we come to the final question. which is the most crucial one on this podcast, so please prepare yourself. And it is about the subject of biscuits. What biscuit was powering the writing of The Mystery of Yew Tree House? What is your biscuit of choice?
Oh, gosh. Well, you see, it's my biscuit of choice is one that I also say to myself that I can't have, really. But it's always, always a digestive. Not chocolate, just digestives. And I could get through a whole packet. But I have to say, for The Mystery of Yew Tree House, I was trying not to eat biscuits. So I was eating mixed nuts from our local health food store, which are delicious in their own right, but that's not a biscuit. So I can unhesitatingly say it's digestives every time.
Fantastic.
I moved on. It used to be rich tea, but it's now digestives. Oh,
so you've upgraded your rich tea to a digestive.
I have, but I haven't because I've told myself that too many. When you can't get close enough to the desk to do the keyboard.
Well, whatever powers the writing is fine with us. But Leslie, it's just been wonderful to talk to you and hear more about your latest book, The Mystery of Yew Tree House. Leslie Thompson, thank you so very much.
Thank you, Philippa. It's a brilliant treat, as I said. Fantastic. Thank you.
Coming up for more book reviews.
Everyone knows therapy is great for solving problems, but getting therapy has its own problems too, like finding the right therapist, fitting into their schedule, and of course, the cost. Well, BetterHelp can solve those problems. It's totally online and built around your schedule. It's surprisingly affordable too. Connect with a credentialed therapist by phone, video, or online chat, all from the comfort of your home. Visit BetterHelp.com to learn more and save 10% on your first month. That's BetterHelp, H-E-L-P.
Millions of people have lost weight with personalized plans from Noom. Like Evan, who can't stand salads and still lost 50 pounds.
Salads generally for most people are the easy button, right? For me, that wasn't an option. I never really was a salad guy. That's just not who I am. But Noom worked for me.
Get your personalized plan today at Noom.com. Real Noom user compensated to provide their story. In 4 weeks, the typical Noom user can expect to lose 1 to 2 pounds per week. Individual results may vary.
Imagine the softest sheets you've ever felt. Now imagine them getting even softer over time. That's what you'll feel with Boll & Branch's organic cotton sheets. In a recent customer survey, 96% replied that Boll & Branch sheets get softer with every wash. Start getting your best night's sleep in these sheets that get softer and softer for years to come. Try their sheets with a 30-night guarantee. Plus, get 15% off your first order at bollandbranch.com. Code BUTTERY. Exclusions apply. See site for details.
I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me, because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Right, so let's get stuck into these final four books on the Women's Prize. Long list, if the Women's Prize isn't your bag, normal service will be resumed probably next week, I'd have thought. We'll see. But I've got some other books to tell you about that I'm just holding back until we've got through this Women's Prize long list. Okay, so the first one is Soldier Sailor by Claire Kilroy. And I had previously seen a video review of someone talking about this book. And when they were talking, I was sold. I just had to read the book. And this is a book about, it's about the early days of motherhood. And it's as if the mother is talking to the baby. And it just reminded me of how hard it is, and how sometimes just being able to get through the day, having not had a calamity of serious proportions, sometimes that's enough. Sometimes you can't even get out of the house, you can't get yourself together, you can't pack the bag, look after the baby and get out. Sometimes literally just surviving for that day is a job well done. And that's what really reminded me about this book. It's about some really full-on things that she thinks about and considers as a mother that weren't the bad places I went to, I'm relieved to say. And yet some of the bad places that she went to, more in her mind, I think, I found motherhood very tricky. And I find motherhood tricky now, let's be honest. But when they were newborns and very little, that was my really hard place. And hats off to anyone who is surviving that. But this book, I love the book. It didn't sort of trigger me. And again, as I've said in previous episodes, it just helps me. I love reading things about things that I have struggled with. It just helps me process it. And this book did it for me. It's a short book. It was about 200 pages, I think, something like that. But I really enjoyed it. Oh, no, 240 pages. Tell a lie. But I just whipped through it. It was quite a quick read. But it does cover some difficult subjects. I don't think I'm really giving you any meat about the book, but I don't think I should. I think it's just something that either you will enjoy or you won't. If you want to hear about the triggering side of early motherhood, this book's your bag, and I highly recommend it. But also, you need to be comfortable in reading a book that's written as if it's just all this sort of spewing of information and lack of support maybe from others. I enjoyed it very much, but that's just me. Now, the next book is Eight Lives of a Century-Old Tricks by Myron A. Lee. And let me tell you a little bit about this. At the Golden Sunset Retirement Home, it is not unusual for residents to invent stories. So an elderly Ms. Mook first begins to unspool her memories. The obituarist listening to her is sceptical. Stories of captivity, friendship, murder, assumed identities and spying. A life that moves from World War II Indonesia to Busan during the Korean War, from Cold War Pyongyang to a Protestant church in China. The adventures are so colourful and various, at times so unbelievable. Surely they can't all belong to the same woman. Can they? Now, when I read that, I thought, I'm in. This book sounds brilliant. I have to admit, I struggled with this book. It didn't pull me in. I didn't connect with it as much. But I think that was very much me, not the book. It just, sadly, didn't pull me in. Wasn't my favourite. The next one was Enter Ghost by Isabella Hammard. Now, I listened to this as an audio book and I enjoyed the narrator in it. But let me tell you a little bit about it. After years away from her family's homeland and reeling from a disastrous love affair, the actress returns to visit her older sister, Hanine. On her arrival, she finds her relationship to Palestine is fragile, both bone deep and new. When Sonia meets the charismatic Mariam, a local director, she joins a production of Hamlet in the West Bank. Soon, Sonia is rehearsing with a dedicated, if competitive, group of men. Yet, as opening night draws closer, it becomes clear just how many obstacles stand before the troupe. Amidst it all, the life she once knew starts to give way to the exhilarating possibility of finding a new self in her ancestral home. I think you can't read or listen to a book about Palestine and not feel all the feels. So it is a very interesting book. I love the Hamlet references. I like the way she told you a lot about what's going on without preaching. It's a moving book. There were times when, I'm ashamed to say, I struggled. I found it quite slow. I found the final sort of sections really picked up a pace and delivered quite a punch. So I thought it was a good book. It's difficult because a book written about this subject, you've just got to hold up and talk about. Will it be in my top? We'll have to see. I thought it was okay. I kept listening. There were times when I sped up the speed, but when I got to the final section, I did slow it down to listen to more slowly. But there we go. That is Enter Ghost. And then the final book, number 16, was A Trace of Sun by Pam Williams. Now, let me tell you a little bit about this. Rafe is left behind in Granada when his mother, Scylla, follows her husband to England in search of a better life. When they are finally reunited 7 years later, they are strangers, and the emotional impact of the separation leads to events that rip their family apart. As they try to move forward with their lives, his mother's secret will make Rafe question all he's ever known of who he is. Now, I found this, I was taken in by the book, I was interested in it, but as it went on, okay, in book chat, there is this phrase, I'm sure you've heard of it, DNF. If you haven't heard of it, it means did not finish. And it's when you started a book, you weren't getting on with it, so you didn't finish it. I DNF'd a book. I've got a new phrase that is RTF, rushed to finish. I very rarely do not finish, but I do rush to finish a book. And this, I'm afraid, I rushed to finish, but I think I was just suffering from women's prize overload. It was the last book. I just, for some reason, I just had to get them all read in quite a short space of time. It's just how my brain does things. I can't have long-term goals. If I say, right, I'm going to write a pantomime, I'm going to write it and I'm going to write it straight away. If I'm going to read all 16 books of the Women's Prize, my brain can't cope with saying I'll read one every now and then and get it done within 3 months. I just, no, we've got to do it now. And so that is entirely my fault. Don't let my view of A Trace of Sun affect your view. And I am deeply sorry that that was the last book that I read. So it didn't grip me as much as other books, but it could be entirely because of book overload. So yes, RTF, rush to finish that one. So those are your books. We've had the wonderful Leslie Thompson on talking to us about her latest book, The Mystery of Yew Tree House. And I've reviewed as well the final four books on the Women's Prize fiction long list, which was Soldier Sailor by Claire Kilroy, Eight Lives of a Century-Old Trickster by Mirrene Lee, Enter Ghost by Isabella Hamad, and A Trace of Sun by Pam Williams. Those are your books. As I say, in another episode, at some point, I will be telling you my top six. And I have other books that are not on the Women's Prize long list that I am reading and loving and can't wait to tell you about. So just bear with me. I'll be back with more soon. And just look after yourselves and I'll talk to you very soon. Take care now. Bye-bye.
You've been listening to the Quick Book Reviews podcast. That's enough books, said no one, ever. See you again soon.
Imagine the softest sheets you've ever felt. Now imagine them getting even softer over time. That's what you'll feel with Boll & Branch's organic cotton sheets. In a recent customer survey, 96% replied that Boll & Branch sheets get softer with every wash. Start getting your best night's sleep in these sheets that get softer and softer for years to come. Try their sheets with a 30-night guarantee. Plus, get 15% off your first order at bollandbranch.com. Code BUTTERY. Exclusions apply. See site for details.
How would you like to look 5 years younger? In a clinical study, people that had volume added with Juvederm Voluma XC in the cheeks perceived themselves as looking 5 years younger at 6 months after treatment. Look younger, feel like you. Add volume for lift and contour in the cheeks with Juvederm Voluma XC. Reverse signs of aging by adding volume to smooth laugh lines with Juvederm Volure XC. For important safety information and to find a licensed specialist, visit Juvederm.com. That's Juvederm.com. Not for people with severe allergic reactions, allergies to lidocaine, or the proteins used in Juvederm. Common side effects include injection site redness, swelling, pain, tenderness, firmness, lumps, bumps, bruising, discoloration, or itching. There's a risk of unintentional injection into a blood vessel, which can cause vision abnormalities, blindness, stroke, temporary scabs, or scarring. Talk to a licensed specialist to find out if it's right for you.
Hey, it's Paige DeSorbo from Giggly Squad. High quality fashion without the price tag. Say hello to Quince. I'm snagging high-end essentials like cozy cashmere sweaters, sleek leather jackets, fine jewelry, and so much more. With Quince being 50 to 80% less than similar brands. And they partner with factories that prioritize safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. I love that. Luxury quality within reach. Go to quince.com/style to get free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. Quince.com/style.